Hey, this is Mike J, and welcome everyone. We're going to get started with a call right in mechanics. And when I look at mechanics, I know it's the wrong kind of word to use, but at the same time, it works for me. So for now, until I figure out another word, basically just the mechanisms that are involved. I started this path about 20 years ago, wrote a book based on it and published that 2012. But basically, the short of it is just looking from a path of consumption to a path of purpose. This also, like all other paths, have slippery slopes. And at the same time, when we look at ideal in terms of connection, clarification, commitment, or if you're a Dale Carnegie graduate, don't criticize, condemn, or complain. That's the first thing they teach you. And I have that as my Jiminy Cricket, not that I have a Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder. And it's really hard for me being a critical person not to do that. And an extrovert, which blames everybody, extra punitive people blame everybody else. I figured out the other day that extroversion is, which no one, which I have not seen Jung on his older interviews or anything talk about this, but my guess is that extroversion is a mechanism which is cathartic for the extrovert. And because introverts don't have it, they are unhappier. Now, I'm not saying that extroverts in general don't have a lot of regret and remorse because of their extroversion, because we all say the wrong thing sometimes. But at the same time, I was thinking about that a couple of days ago, and something came up, some kind of stress tagged on to one or two things right in a row. And the idea behind purpose is understanding when you're triggered, because if you get triggered, you go unconscious. That, I mean, you're unconscious. We're about 97% or so unconscious. So we've got all these things wired in, all these scripts, all these ways of doing things, so that when we get in a situation, which I'll talk about later in the call in terms of spotlight and floodlight consciousness, that we're able to, take that spotlight and put it on the problem, and then everything else runs automatically. But I noticed that having been triggered, I said to the person who was at the end, not the one who triggered, but getting the load, I said, I just started out the call, I've been triggered. Well, the minute you've been triggered, you want to know that you've been triggered and then begin the process. Over time, you'll have to create this automatic of de-triggering, in other words, desensitizing the trigger. And I noticed that extroversion does that very well. And so I was thinking the other day, when we coach extroverts, we talk about them really just learning to shut up at first, because they're not very discretionary about their thoughts, and therefore they tend to extrovert what they're thinking. Well, that's all well and good, because that's an automated system. Basically, I think it's probably what de-stresses extroverts is the talking itself, the expression. And so very interesting process. So one of the things that I'm going to add as I go along in terms of extrovert and introversion is this idea of being able to detoxify one's quote unquote listening and thinking, which we'll also talk about a little bit later in terms of how it goes. So you introverts, I know you won't, but think about us extroverts, and we're going to detox, and you guys are going to retox and run cortisol in your system for longer than you need to, even after you've been triggered. So that's something to think about in terms of don't criticize, condemn, or complain, which Dale Carnegie teaches in his speaking program, which I highly recommend. Never been to really a better program. It's an ideal way of learning stuff, doing stuff, really using, and I don't think they do it on purpose, but really using the Kolb experiential learning cycle, really. Which is called kelp, not LSI, for those of you that haven't run into that yet. What I did in terms of ideal CCC, or connection, clarification, commitment, our three C's in Coach Two, is I'm continuously trying to walk through the model that we want to use as part of the Lead You Way that has formed over these last 4 decades, and also tweak that in such a way so that it makes sense. Because if I could figure out another word for monetize, I would love to. So if anybody thinks of something, put it in the chat window. But in other words, what you have to do in a world where you're where you need things, not want things, but need things, you know, like food or shelter or water or some help or whatever. You've got to figure out what it is that you do that you can trade for what it is someone else does that you need. And of course, in the old days, that was a process of barter, and then they came up with money and a store of value, and we're back to talking about that. And in this decade, about what it really is, money is crypto money, is gold money, metals money. You know, I told my group the other day in the Philippines, chickens is our new money because we know that if money goes away, you got to eat. So you got to have something to trade, and everybody wants eggs and chickens. So that's not a bad currency. But I'm trying to figure out another word to do that because monetize, I use it in a figurative way, and many people take it literally. And so it becomes, it's actually in my system, a sort of pejorative word because everybody thinks about money, money, money. No, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about exchange. In other words, whatever you do with purpose, you have to figure out how to fill in the gaps of culture, condition, and requirements in order to get where you're going to get. Our idea from a path of consumption to a path of purpose is, in fact, how do we consume the right things? In other words, we don't need to consume everything that marketing today, which is ubiquitous, tells us we should consume. In fact, you know, they've really created a mass psychosis around this, and people talk about mass psychosis and what it does, but really they've done that. And of course, that was on purpose, as you know, because it was Lehman Brothers. And very ironic. It was Lehman Brothers back in the 30s, a banker that was working for Lehman Brothers that said basically what we have to do is change the people's psychology from needing to wanting. And that's what began PR, you know, public relations, all the ideas that we are using in social media, marketing, everything else, and the mass psychosis that they created out of it. So as I get a little bit later down into the call, I'm going to show you that all roads lead to Rome. In other words, everything comes back to purpose. You can solve any problem you have with purpose. However, you got to be a little bit creative with it and be able to know that you can exchange, create an exchange with your environment, your culture, the conditions that arise, obviously, and the requirements. So what I put together there, and I'm debating right now, the reason I put that up there, I'm debating about whether to put purpose up under assess. In other words, whatever it is you do, you can use assessments. They're easy. They are not that expensive, and they're fast. And you can get a quick idea almost immediately of where you're going to need to go. So we're going to do that with leadyou.me and just kind of segregate these ideas a moment in terms of website that I drop down there, and just so we can have separate people managing them rather than loading Gary up all the time. Although Gary, obviously, everything will be duplicated at leadyou.com. But the idea is applying opportunity, and you know opportunity. If you don't, it stands for openings, plans, openings, possibilities, plans, outcomes, and right action in view of everything. We call it unity, called to get to unity. I mean, obviously, people would love to get to unity, and we talk a little bit about that. And people are talking a lot about it in a lot of different ways, but it's very difficult. But at least you should, in terms of perspective, you should have more than just yours. That would be helpful. But applying the opportunity model, we're going to do that with leadyou.ai because working on a formula right now. It says, well, look, based on what your how would I say it? Your attributes that come from the assessments that we feel and the assessment model feels are significant, like in terms of, you know, what we used to call learning styles, which is now KELP. We talk about, you know, experience. We talk about reflecting on that experience, modeling it, and then trying it out through active experimentation. Those are four attributes of that particular model, which we can plug in, and then we can get AI to look at that and begin to say, okay, based on this culture, conditions, and requirements, here's where the gaps are. Now, you may want to close some of them, you may want to leave some of them open. The biggest thing that I try to do to get people is not to solve problems, because that takes time, energy, resources, my team, as we call it, money, information, time, energy, attention, motivation. You want to prevent. You don't want any of that coming in. So the idea behind this model is to, some gaps are going to just be okay. We're going to just leave them open. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on that, because if even if you spend 50 years on something, which I have on a couple of my attributes, I spent 50 years trying to fix them, and I've only just barely begun. Well, I'm not going to be around another 50 to work on them, so therefore I need to leave some of that alone. So the biggest thing is prevent it. So don't put myself in a situation where those attributes and those gaps are going to be a problem. So that's another way of thinking about this model. And then, of course, that's the development part that we'll do and lead you coach, because there are some very specific developmental, how would I say it, modus operandi in terms of what you take on and what you leave alone, what you let go of, and what you just, you know, have to tolerate. I won't say he's a good friend, but I did work with him while he was alive, Thomas Leonard. And we actually worked on something called the Daily MBA, which we never got done because he died. But at the same time, one of the things that he used to say is don't tolerate anything. Well, I disagree with that. We always had that disagreement, because you tolerate things by letting them go. And therefore, the toleration happens as if you don't tolerate. So in other words, there's a couple ways around that. So the development is important. And then, of course, using purpose as a path. In other words, do I really need to own this? Do I need to buy this? I mean, I have been freed. I grew up in a car family, okay? Back in the 60s drag race, cars were my life for a long time. Then it became trucks, and then it became anything that had an engine in it. I don't have a car now. I haven't had a car for quite some time. And you know what? It's really great. Yeah, it's coming from a car person. So in other words, the idea is, in my case, wanting to be very independent, the car, the vehicle, whatever it was, provided that. Now I've found other ways, you know. So this is an interesting, you know, example. And then, of course, whatever it is you do, in those moments where you have determined that you need that, the gap needs to be closed some way or another. And you remember, the best thing you can do in terms of resilience is close the gap with other people. In other words, let others reach out to others, let them close the gap. So that's really an important thing, and hard to do for people who have a gap around collaboration, you know, intimacy, not reaching out, stuff like that. So I'm just working through that model in my brain as we go forward and teach people about these things that, you know, I think you're going to work coming forward. We're going to go to the next section and talk about book. I made a deal with myself not to update the book title and cover until after the first of the year. Let me sleep on it. Let me think on it. Let the year pass. But I'm pretty sure it's going to be Live, Love, Ask. We went from Living Inquiry to Living and Loving Inquiry. We went from that to Live, Love, Inquiry. Now, I believe I'm just going to keep it simple and just do Live, Love, Ask. Got to get this book behind me, because there's five other books, you know, in the process. So that's the problem when you let something linger a long time, even though it's made the system, which is the core system that we have to use and all this stuff I just talked about in the first segment. But at the same time, need to get it moving. I just saw something here. I get new books all the time that say this and say that. And there were takeaways from this book on, I think it was, if you scroll down, you'll see something like How to Live an Extraordinary Life. I should have put the author there, but I didn't. Anyway, if you look that up, you can find out the author. And in every one of these are the most common mistakes in terms of our process, in terms of the Lead You Way. In other words, this is what we call a composite. In other words, a composite is something that everybody takes the best practices and puts together and then frames you into that. And it's really frame. It's blackmail. There's no question about it. In other words, we are not to strive for being a composite. We are to strive for being on purpose. And the purpose is very individual, very unique. And so all this mass psychosis that we're creating around socialism and everybody should want this and do this and this is what makes you happy and not. That's all a bunch of baloney. There isn't any one of those things that they said that doesn't start with, who am I? In other words, that's process. When you go back to saying, well, how can you live a great life? Well, you can know who you are. In other words, what I said is all roads lead to Rome. They do. In other words, everything comes back to this prime, this main thing that we're talking about is need to know yourself. And there's just, it's really, they talk about space being, the final frontier. No, it's yourself. And the self ideas that we have are really the final frontier. So you'll hear more about that as we go on forward through this process. We're talking about listen here. I ran across this piece and listen. I thought it was really a nice piece. It doesn't exactly frame our idea, but it frames a couple of bullet points in our idea. And that is, who are you listening to? The idea behind listen before you inquire is who you're listening to. Are you listening to that chatter that's going on in your head, that the thing that goes on, and they explain why it's there. That's very cool because it's important not to say, well, stop it. Everybody thinks that you should die to the ego or that you should die to this inner voice or you should die to think. No, you shouldn't. You just need to, you just need to observe them and objectify them, not be subject to them all the time. Certainly, you want to be subject to them sometimes because your body and mind know more about you than you do, because they're informed by the way in which you were put together in terms of, genes, memes, and things, and all that sort of jazz. So that's a nice piece. But you want to listen to that sometime when you got to. If you're going to listen to the whole thing, it's only 25 minutes long, but it's really a nice piece in terms of trying to understand a process that's going on with you in terms of the chatter and the mind and what the role of the mind is versus the role of the self. Very interesting. So I thought you might do that. We have a few of those things in listen already in terms of the process that we use to inquire. In other words, you become better at inquiry when you become better listener. I made a note when you engage the DISS, I still haven't figured a better name for that, dynamic inquiry system skills. You practice all the skills necessary for self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-correction, and meditation. I've often said that Coach 2 is just a meditative process if you really understand it. The videos for the DISS, just a reminder there, I finished all of the short ones I need to start working on. The longer ones now. And then what I'm going to do with the final videos, which are the videos that are more than 10 minutes long, is I'm going to use PowerPoint on that rather than just doing teleprompter, I think. We want to go to the next session. I just grabbed this CEO checklist. I think I may have talked about it some time ago or something like that. And there it is for you. I think it's very handy if you're coaching people who are leading at the top level. And it actually is very handy because there isn't any of those systems that they talk about in that checklist that a CEO doesn't touch on. Now, whether they're wired for it, that's a whole other thing. It was so funny. But I was talking to some really important people at a very large hedge fund and trying to teach them a little bit about this process. And I found out through the assessment process that the person that they had actually named to be CEO probably would not make a good one. In other words, probably would also be unhappy. And I made that remark, and everybody just sort totally freaked out. I mean, really just freaked out. But actually, my prediction came true. Is the person did not really fit in that because they had different talents. They had different ways of doing things. So you can spot that really very quickly when you look at path of purpose. And when it doesn't go through this sort of checklist idea, a person being able to sort of notice all those things, but not necessarily have a talent for one or two, which they then, like Maslow, look for nails because they got a hammer. And that's going to be the most important thing as we move forward, as the CEOs just go through literal hell in the next decade. It is going to be just not a good decade for them. Mention spotlight versus floodlight consciousness. There's a 9-minute video there, and if you never ran into Alan Watts, it's a great introduction because not only is he very clear and confident and sort of knowing. He has really good stuff. And so I have listened to him for a while. The reason I put that date there was that was the date I listen to it, I think maybe for the first time, I started recording everything that I listen, watch, and anything that makes some kind of impact, like a bibliography. You know, like you see something or read something. Well, this is a videography, and it's mostly videos that I have seen that have made an impact. And I've been doing that for the last 2.5 years, just to be able to not only one sort of remember when a concept comes up to go back and be able to have a video right there, but at the same time, just looking at my overall development. What am I reading? What's becoming a part of me? What's choosing me? Those kind of things like that. Because we don't really choose anything. I mean, I think I spoke earlier in the R&D system where we said something about Saplitz, Stanford professor. I think his first name is Robert. I'm not sure, but he wrote a book called, I think it's a one word book. But if you look it up, you'll see his latest book. And he says, we have no free will. And then somebody's interviewing him and they say, well, what are we going to do about it? And he says, that'll take 500 years. I mean, look, it's taken a couple thousand years for us to think we have free will. It'll take a couple thousand for us to realize that we don't. Everything's choosing us. In other words, it's just like blasphemy if you say that, you know, because it says, oh, it takes all the control out, all that sort of stuff. Which, by the way, the videos that I've presented to you help you with that in terms of manifesting what you can control and what you can't, and leaving the rest of the stuff alone and stuff like that. So that's a pretty cool thing. I don't think we're going to get there just like he did. I was really impressed with that comment that he made. He says, oh, you know, it's too hard. It's too hard for people to figure out they don't have free will because the alternatives are too hard. And so it'll take, you know, 500 years, 1,000 years for us to figure out that, you know, we basically are running off what has us and what's choosing us, and we don't realize it. And of course, I realized this some time ago, which is why I formulated the models that I formulated and why I'm having so much trouble getting live, love, ask out, because I continue to want to put the teachable points of view with it that made the big shifts that you have to make when you listen before you talk. And that's what changes the way we meet people where they are. So, a very interesting, you know, process in the spotlight versus the floodlight, and the idea of that, you know, maybe most of us not relying so much on the spotlight, because everything that we shine the spot on is great, but everything that we're missing, which is 95, 98% of what we can't see, has to do with what's important. The spotlight probably has to do with what it is we have to take care of now. The old idea behind Covey's idea. I took a lot from Covey, because Covey took a lot from the wisdom literature. I don't know that anybody's really studied him much. And I know they don't now, because his stuff, like Saplitz, is too hard. Because I think Covey's failure in the fact that the seven habits, and now eight or nine or what, how many they've added, are not ubiquitous, is that it takes a composite personnel. You know, when you look at, one of the things that I did when I picked a portfolio of assessments is I looked at how many possibilities of personality do we have? When we go back to the MBTI, there's 16 different types. You know, Reese has 16 desires, 32 endpoints, but 16 continuums. Like, you know, I think it was Aristotle that talked about continuums of virtue, and the idea of getting too far one side or the other side is really going to, you know, create your problems. And so you look at these things, you know, Big Five, it has five factor fives, quite a few personalities. Four is 24, five goes way up. Somebody can drop that in, and I think it's 125 or something like that, factorial. So in other words, the combinations that you get. One reason Reese said that there's nobody like anybody else, he says we have 16 desires, and if you do 16 factorial, you'll see that's a couple trillion. So in other words, we haven't got there yet in terms of having everybody who could have everything there, having it in us being able to see it. And people tend to stereotype. In other words, the four factor models are important because they only issue 24 things. And some people can handle that. Covey said you could handle between 3 and 10. That's why our phone numbers are 10 digits, those kind of things like that. Can't remember much more than 7. That's why he stayed at 7 habits. But the idea behind that process is just like the one that I showed you in the prior segment, I think it was, where I was talking about takeaways. In other words, takeaways to lead an extraordinary life. And oh, by the way, the way I got those takeaways is I took the summary that was free online and available to anyone, and I dropped that in AI. And I said, AI, just give me the bullet points and bingo. But you talk about AI increasing your productivity, because I could have went through and taken the titles off myself and put them in there. But it was like, took 2 seconds and you got it. So in other words, I could take it and share it with you immediately, and you've got it, and you don't have to go necessarily read the book. Although if you believe in some of those things, you would want to read what he said about it or get AI to expand on it. But this is how everything is starting to go. I use AI all the time. You know, can you look at this transcript and give me the bullet points? Can you look at this article and tell me what's the main thing? I mean, it just, with the amount of information coming at us, AI is like a helper. Now, you have to remember that AI is not an answer to everything. It tends to hallucinate. Although I did see an announcement yesterday where ChatGPT-01, which is the reasoning model, the one that takes time to quote unquote think, they say, before it answers. Well, 03 is coming out already. They skipped 02 because there's a company trademark out there called 02. So they went from 01 to 03, but they say 03 is AGI, you know, the generative intelligence that they're all shooting for. And of course, then a lot of other people come out and say, no, it's not, but it's we're getting closer and closer, faster and faster. And the reason that they got so close so fast was that they had the AI work on itself. In other words, they told the AI, make a better version of yourself. Okay. And then they look at that version. Then they say, make another version of yourself. Then make another version. Well, that's what's going to happen. I mean, not only recursion and replication, but that's what's going to happen. So if you're not into AI, you will be run by AI. Everything's going to be run by AI, unfortunately. The human life, you're going to have to go somewhere far away like me to get away from it. I mean, we have our own little sleepy hollow here. Or at least I'm not there yet. I'm in Cebu. I'll go to Camotes Island, which is our little sleepy hollow where nothing comes. It, like somebody said, if you live on an island, nothing that you need is there, really. So it has to be brought there. And if it's not brought there, it's not there. And that gives you an idea about mass psychosis and all those other things. The people there are protected basically from the world because they're in subsistence mode and they don't really have time for what people are talking about on social media. You know, really interesting laboratory to be there and to watch people. I've had a wonderful experience so far, even though it's been absolutely and totally 100% frustrating at times. But I guess that's the grit that you need for the oyster and all that jazz. So I'm going to see if there's anything. Gary, is anybody put anything in chat box? Anybody have any questions? Anybody want to volunteer anything? We got a few minutes left. I could speak on anything that you want, but I'm kind of happy with where we've got here. In lieu of questions, Gary, just speak out if you have some, but I'll just fill up this next couple of minutes. I'm very happy with where we've got. This process has been good for me because it gives me as an extrovert the ability to know what it is I think, because extroverts don't know what they think until they hear themselves say it. And even then, it needs to be said several times because their thinking process is actually looking at that in several different ways in terms of saying, well, is that really what you mean? Maybe you should say it different, or rather than just recycle. I mean, this is the kind of the thought process that goes on. So I really appreciate that. We've got one more session. I'm going to tell you about what it is, what next steps are, what we're going to do, where we've gotten. We're almost there in terms of being able to sort of open the gate a little bit and allow some more people to come into R&D, because we're going to R&D the Listen program, which I think is going to be really important because I've been teaching it for more than 15 years. And then, of course, I taught the skills intuitively all those years since about 1999. I don't even know how long that is, maybe almost, what, 25 or something like that. So it took that long to codify what is it that I did intuitively to then share it with other people so they can say, well, I can make my system understand that, rather than having the intuitive nature of saying, well, that doesn't work, try this, or getting a little piece of information. I mean, that's what intuitives do. They're able to take a very small amount of information and automatically deduce models and things and stuff like that. Well, obviously not everybody's intuitive, although everybody has intuition. So important thing to remember there. At the same time, what I've done is taken it out of intuition and put it in sensing. So all of us are both intuitive and sensitive, but t some tend to be more conscious than others and more dominant. So that's what we're going to do with listen. We made a simple, sort of not really game, but experience out of the seven P's, easy to remember, much like the seven habits. I haven't found anything that can't fit into those seven buckets. So, we know where active listening fits. We know where not active listening fits. We know where meditation fits. We know where the pacing of development fits. We know where development and speed fits. We know what iterative development fits. We know all these different things. And of course, the hardest are the ones where you have to not only observe yourself and your thinking, quote unquote, apparatus, which I found very interesting when you listen to that video. I should make that video in listening for, because what they talk about in there, and what I am going to do with these videos that I come across, we've found a mechanism which Mike is working on. We're going to take the video, extract the transcript and a summary from it, and then I'm going to recompute it through AI to give you the main points so that we can, so I can say, well, here's one of the main points of that video. One of the main points is that more than likely the self is the observer. And so very difficult to know that. And that's what a lot of the Eastern tradition talks about. The thinking process, which is also, let's just say, another part of the self. And some people probably tend to think the emotional side of that reasoning process is, in fact, as Jung talked about logic and values, and I'm going to start talking about logic and ideology, being the two ways in which we rationalize things, a process to where it's necessary. In other words, that process that's going on in your head is your organism that's the vehicle for yourself, the observer, the dwelling that intends to preserve the dwelling and help the dwelling accomplish its wired in purpose. So it's a very important process that you're listening to. However, it's not us. Of course, that's like going back to free will and saying, well, how long will it take to be able to do that? Oh, I don't know, 10 centuries or something like that. So in lieu of that, I'm gonna come back to where we are and throw a rope to people and say, look, here's how you can upgrade the process that you have going on so that you then begin to be able to live with less footprint. It's more sustainable, you're better for the environment, you don't cause so much chain problems in the supply chain, you don't need to have all these things. You don't need to have storage. All these things don't matter. They were part of that. You got to, what is now a very, like a rope bridge, when you see the boards laid down and the rope, and you have to walk across that teetery bridge that swings in the wind and all that. That's kind of what we have to help people walk across right now. And some may be able to make it. And it's important that while we're doing that we're helping constantly. And so helping people take that next right thing, which I love from Jung. I mean, he must have finally got down to the point to where he couldn't answer all those letters that he was getting about what should I do, what should I do, what should I do? And he just basically said, hey, the next right thing. And that's not a bad thing. It also kind of keeps you in the present, which is not such a bad thing. Although being in the present, being a person who's in the present, there's a few gaps that you're going to create by being that. So go ahead, Bill.
Okay, I'm trying to understand the use of the escalator process in terms of the fee structure for the course. Unless I'm missing something, I understand the process of escalation, but what I'm not seeing or missing is why it's coming out now at this stage of the development process as opposed to later when the course will be open to everybody.
Oh, because the prices will start at a different place. That's the easy answer.
Okay.
Yeah. In other words, right now, this is wholesale. You're in a wholesale environment. When the real thing happens, Bill, you won't be able to get it this cheap. I'll be worth a lot more then.
Well, you're already worth a lot more. So, I mean,
Okay, thanks.
that's why I'm
Yeah.
in, but
Sure. That's
I
why.
was curious.
Yeah, we're just, we're wholesale right now. We're R&D right now. And it's important that we do this work, and I give as much as I can, and you give a little. And when we get around to the real deal, we're going to do it country by country so we can normalize the currencies and the commitments and all those sort of things. But that's why.
Okay, thanks.
The escalator stops in a year at 1999, and that's the new price.